Spirit Blade Underground, January 30th, 2009.
Warning, access restricted. Enter password. DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome.
Spirit Blade Underground, January 30th, 2009.
Well, hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast. I'm Peter France and the creator of Spirit Blade Productions. We're bringing you Christian sci-fi and fantasy that's unsterilized, unsafe, and unleashed on your ears and imagination. You can check out what we're doing and grab lots of cool downloads and even find out how you can get involved in one of our productions at www.spiritblade.net. It's been really cool to get the conversation going with some of you folks that have signed up for the Spirit Blade Underground Alliance. I'm looking forward to seeing what we will do together. Again, you can find out more info at spiritblade.net. Well, it is a hugely packed show today, so we got to get into it. Let's get into updates.
File access. Updates.
Okay, scripting is nearly finished for Pilgrim's Progress, Similitude of a Dream, our next project. I would guess that after another week of polishing and detailing, I will be ready to begin the casting process, so stay tuned for the official casting call. Should be coming soon, in just a couple weeks here, I would think. It's been a very unusual experience to approach the pre-production phase after so little time spent on writing, but with the original work to base my script on and the 60-minute runtime that I'm shooting for, it's kind of a no-brainer that the process as a whole has moved more quickly this time. Casting may be more of a challenge than usual, though. This story has about 10 characters in the first hour alone. Each of them has a substantial amount of dialogue, so the number of characters requiring what I would consider especially solid performances has instantly multiplied compared to Dark Ritual, even though that project has a runtime of about 3 hours. So I'm exploring some new avenues for finding actors that I hope will bring good results in every aspect of my process. I think I'm continually learning new ways to do things, and it makes the process fun and improves my work, but wow, it just never seems to let up. Okay, on today's show, I'm going to have the second part of my interview with Star Trek actor, author, and creator of fansforchrist.org, Stephen Weiss. And then after that, I'm going to rant on some Legend of the Seeker philosophy and on DC's Final Crisis. We're going to take a look at 1 Corinthians, and then we're going to have some of your comments here on the show today. So that's a lot that we've got to do. It might not sound like a lot, but we got to do it now.
Interview.
Activated.
Now, what sense did you get for, I was originally going to limit this to just the director, but what sense did you get overall of everybody, J.J. Abrams, Zachary Quinto, you know, and everybody else, of their knowledge and or appreciation of the history of the franchise?
Well, you know, J.J. Abrams was completely, like, distant from us. He was really only talking to the principals, and I didn't even really see him. It was kind of a large set, and there were some dark areas, and he was kind of hanging out in this darker area with his monitors and everything, so I just would hear his voice come along, like the little, that's where he got, like a bullhorn or, you know, whatever.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
You know, give directions, but I didn't really see him. Now, so as far as I don't have any personal knowledge to add any more than, like, you know, I'm in a mention of the Entertainment Weekly article, which is like a 5-page spread on it, that where he goes into the fact where he's not a Trekkie. He's not really into it that much, and he's doing his own thing with it, really.
Okay.
So as far as him, that's what he said, you know.
So do you think, based on your experience, just the look of the set, the look of the costumes, the feel of whatever scene or scenes you were involved in, are we looking at a Battlestar Galactica kind of overhaul of the original material? And I don't mean plot wise. I mean how in Battlestar they've really, the character has taken center stage. It's character driven sci-fi, whereas Roddenberry's various Star Trek TV shows were all very concept driven. It was all what new alien concept of the week, or, you know, what time space distortion of the week thing is weird, and how does it work and stuff. Is it more, would you say it's more character driven or more concept driven, or what's your feel?
Well, I'm going to rant for a moment if you'll let me.
Sure.
I actually posted a blog on this. I have a Hollywood blog, which I haven't updated for a while. I've kind of been bad with it, but it's called Stephen Hollywood. It's stephenhollywood.today.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote an entry on it, basically because I was really sick of reading and talking to Star Trek fans who were like, oh, they're ruining it. They've done this. And all the things they would list would be really minor changes. You know, oh, they're building the Enterprise on the ground instead of in space. Mm. I'm like, who cares? You know, the phasers look different, or, you know, all these little things that, you know, I'm like, it's still Star Trek, you know, it's still...
Go watch the show, right? I mean...
You know, they didn't make Spock a female Klingon, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't, you know, they didn't really... I mean, the only thing that I can see that they kind of have a legitimate gripe about is that Sulu is played by a Korean guy. I'm like, you know, can't you find a Japanese actor to play Sulu? You know, what's up with that? You know, but Hollywood, they make very strange decisions, you know? So, I mean, from my experience, I'm like, you guys should really be happy you're getting a Star Trek movie that looks really good. But so many fans are like, I hate it already. I mean, they don't know anything hardly about it. There's not a whole lot out, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a very small plot synopsis, and there's the cast, and there's the trailer, and a few pictures, and that's it. And they already decided they completely hate it, which, you know, that's completely wrong, and I'm sorry, that's stupid, because... You can't decide you hate something without having seen it, you know? And you're basically biasing yourself by being nitpicky about a few details, you know, like where the Enterprise is built, or, you know, oh, the timeline's wrong because Pike wasn't there, blah, 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 when, or, you know, I don't even know, you know?
It's
just, you know, the thing is how can you be so sacred with the timeline when originally... The whole series was a big mess up when they had the pilot with Pike. And the original, you know, they changed the crew and they inserted that episode with Pike, and that wasn't even supposed to be, you know, part of the timeline anyway.
Yeah.
They changed it and it was a pilot for something else, and, you know, whatever. So, like I said, that's kind of my rant. It's like the whole timeline was a big mess anyway, so why are you so worried about it?
Yeah.
You know, trying to keep it, because it hardly makes sense the way it is anyway. So... But as far as that goes, I love it. I was really impressed. I mean, they took this great 60s type feel from the show, you know, and yet made it modern. They blended them both together, because being on set there was neat. I mean, they had the displays were the newer type displays like you'd see on Next Generation. You know, I guess the like Mac generated displays.
Okay.
Physical hardware looked like all kind of 60s and everything.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it was this really neat blend, and, you know, it was fun because I got to run around, you know, there was some kind of, I guess, I don't even know. They don't tell us much. They're like, okay, run around, you know, there's an alert or something. And so something was going on, and we were like, various machines and flipping these old-style switches.
Sweet.
You know, 60s looking panels and things like that. It was really great, you know. And you know, the uniforms, they didn't change them that much. They just kind of made them look more sleek and modern. I love the new uniforms. And if you look at the pictures they released online, you know, from the EW spread and stuff, you can see that the material for the crew uniform has little, and it looks like a little modeled pattern, you know, like how Spider-Man had the little octagons or whatever, hexagons. Yeah, so they've got little tiny, like, Starfleet insignia.
Oh, sweet.
That's actually what the pattern is, and you can't tell unless you kind of know if they're, or, you know, if you're wearing it.
Oh, that's intense.
Right,
nice. Well, I totally agree with you in your assessment of just kind of like fans and how they can get a little uptight. I am actually one of those fans for the Batman movie. I'm one of the people that actually had a hard time with Dark Knight. I didn't get into, I thought there was some major stuff lacking in that film. But, and I noticed that, I noticed some level of agreement with other comic book fans, but, you know, not everybody. But non-comic book fans I've talked to have universally embraced that movie like it's the best superhero movie ever made, and it does have some real strength to it. So in exchange for my letdown on that, I'm content for some Star Trek fans to be let down with Star Trek so that it can be cool to me, you know. Because I actually I was never a hardcore Trekkie, but I did watch Next Generation onward until Enterprise, which I thought, really went down the crapper. But once shows like Farscape and Battlestar Galactica came to television that were like really character driven sci-fi, I couldn't imagine going back to the same old, you know, dry, sterile, concept driven stories of the Star Trek universe, as much as I loved them when they were on TV, because it was all that was on, really. It was the highest form of sci-fi television at the time. But, you know, we've really grown past that to have more character-driven stories. So I'm hoping to see some sweat stains in Starfleet uniforms and things to get a little bit, earthy, and emotions to get a little bit more raw, and things to just kind of get messed up. So hopefully that will be the case. Okay, can you tell us, are you wearing a red shirt? And how can we, how can we best keep our eyes peeled for you?
All right, this is actually an interesting story. When I went into wardrobe for my fitting, they were going to put me in a red shirt. And, I think that the wardrobe ladies, and it's perfectly acceptable, they didn't really know much about Star Trek. They just are wardrobe ladies that make, costumes all kinds of movies. And so they're like, oh, let's get this guy a red one. And I said, I look really good in blue. I have blue eyes. And she's like, well, I'll let you know, see if there's any of the smalls left in blue, Elvis one left. So, I guess it was kind of like I was torn because, I was like, at first my reaction was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to be a red shirt. But then later I thought, well, it would kind of be cool to have been a red shirt and be like, yes, I was a red shirt. So, I was kind of torn later, but the blue is kind of, I was a big Spock fan. Spock was kind of my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
And so I really wanted to be blue. And then I tell people I was blue, and they're like, oh, medical. I'm like, no! Maybe some blue were medical, but most of the blue were what?
So, how...
Oh, wait, most of the blue were... You know the answer to this, right? I'm asking you.
Oh, no, I have no idea. Is it science? Science officer or something or other?
They were science. That's what I would totally be if I was in, Starfleet, I would totally be science. I'd be a computer guy.
Yeah, see, I'm not even a Star Trek fan, and I got that right. So, what is medical wear? What color is medical?
What's that? Medical's blue, also, but there's not as many. There's mostly the blue is science.
Oh, okay. So. All right. Well, see, medical, that's a science. Medical, I don't know.
Yeah, it sort of is. But,
All right. So, is there a way that
But there was more to that question. Oh, yeah. You wanted to know how we could find
Yeah,
you,
right? Yeah.
All right. Well, I don't want to give any details of the plot away.
Sure.
But there's one point where Kirk and McCoy are on the ship. This is the time when I'm around. And they're trying to hide from Spock for some reason.
Okay.
And that's the day I was filming. They were shooting that. And I don't even really know exactly what was going on in there. I mean, I know a little more what was happening because I, listened to the dialogue, but... That's kind of what's happening. They're walking around, and then they're hiding from Spock for some reason.
Okay.
So I'm walking around in the background during that time and maybe some other times, too. I actually cross – see, this is a thing. I cross in front of them because, and they have – J.J. wasn't directing the extras. They have, extra wranglers.
Sure,
to do that, right, So because they told me to, they told me, hey, you cross in front, walk across. I walked in front of – Kirk and McCoy.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And they were doing, the camera shot was like right behind them. Like, I don't know if it was like getting the back of their head or, something like that. But I walked right in front of them a couple of times.
Did you flash any gang signs on the way through?
God, no. One of two things is going to happen there. I'm either going to be, number one, what they call a wipe. A wipe is when they have people walk in front of the camera.
And they cut away, right?
You don't see the people. You just kind of see a black silhouette go by, so you get the impression. So if I'm too close, I'm just going to be a wipe, and you're not going to see me at all.
Okay.
Or there should be a decent shot of me walking in front of them.
Okay. Do you have hairy knuckles or anything unusual about your hands that we could be watching for?
I mean, they make us all look pretty generic. One thing about being an extra is you don't want to draw attention away from the main character.
Oh, sure, yeah. So they would have shaved your knuckles if they were hairy.
Right, yeah. Okay. You know what's funny? This is great stuff. There's some things I can tell you, about this. I mean, I was only there a day, but all this stuff happened. Because I'm such a nerd, and for years I on my hair, and I've kept for like 4 or 5 years the pointed sideburns like they have on Star Trek.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
because I just liked them, I guess, and I was kind of, it was a little bit of an homage to Star Trek, and I just thought it looked cool. And so I went on set, and when I was in, they were doing my hair, and they did all of our hair, and everything, they trimmed those off.
Oh, I bet straight. They did. Oh.
Yeah, I know. I was like, I have the Star Trek fiber. They trimmed, I'm not sure if they're not really using it for everybody. I can tell that.
Okay.
It might be that just Vulcans have those or something.
Oh, okay. All right. Nice.
Yeah. But yeah, so they cut that, and they parted, you know, my hair and made me look, you know, they definitely were doing the hairstyle 60-ish too, you know.
Okay.
So,
cool.
A little bit of weird alienness, Star Trekness in there, but you know, definitely people look 60s kind of too.
Well, we'll hope that you don't get in trouble for giving away the huge element of the plot that people are hiding from Spock at some point in the movie. but thanks so much for coming on. And I forgot to mention this because it's pretty insignificant in your list of accomplishments. But for those listening, Steve also was in Spirit Blade Dark Ritual. He played the operator that Ram talks to very briefly, that gives him kind of the sit rep on what's going on at the base, and then also he was the U.2 salesman. One of my favorite moments in all of Dark Ritual is the U.2 salesman. Well, good. Well, thanks so much for hanging out and talking with me, Steve.
If I can get another plug in here.
Yeah, please, shoot, go.
Yeah, well, you know, I actually, Spirit Blade, I'm really happy about having done that because I've done very few voice acting things, and I'm trying to get into voice acting.
Oh, cool.
You know, I had a small role in one anime, Helsing, though. It was a really big one.
Sweet.
And, you know, a couple other things. But I just wanted to let you know that I auditioned for some voices for StarCraft II.
Dude.
And for World of Warcraft just yesterday.
Nice. I bet that was
and
fun.
Like, yeah, it was. It looks like I'll at least get to be some folks in World of Warcraft coming out, so that should be fun.
Nice. Awesome. We will keep our ears peeled.
All right.
Well, thanks so much for hanging out with me, Steve. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Inside Pater's Brain.
My thanks again to Stephen Weiss, author of the book, God Loves the Freaks. Go check it out at Amazon.com, or you can get, I think, some more information about it and a lot of other really cool things at fansforchrist.org. And that's F-O-R, not the number 4, fans, F-O-R, Christ.org. All right, I'm going to rant a little bit. First off, Final Crisis, the DC Comics big maxi series event. Final Crisis sucks. If this series is any indication of what more crisis crossovers would be like, I'm glad we're calling this one the final one, right? After a confusing 7-issue arc, I sat down and read all 7 comics back to back to see if the story made any more sense. Not really. This is possibly the most self-indulgent comic book story I have ever read. Grant Morrison juggles a ton of characters that are either obscure, even to a real DC fanatic like me, or brand new without any explanation or reminder of who they are and where they came from and why we should care. I mean, the only way to make sense of this series would be to get a list of every DC comic book Grant Morrison has ever read and study them so that we can know what he obviously thinks we should know about all these Z-list characters. This was actually confirmed in an article I read just yesterday, or no, it was today, came out yesterday though, in Wizard Magazine. They interviewed Grant Morrison, and they talked about what he did for research, and he said he goes through his old comic book collection. Holy crap, the comic books he was reading in the 70s and 80s. Well, if that's the way he does his research, just on the stuff he collected in the 70s and 80s, no wonder the whole story was whacked. Okay, Kalibak is a talking tiger, the Atomic Knights are riding around on giant Dalmatians, and freaking Captain Carrot? What? With the presence of Geoff Johns, it's become really cool recently to take outdated, once goofy character concepts and make them cool again. But guess what? Not everybody can do that well, and not every concept can be made cool. This story was a mess from beginning to end, and maybe those involved convinced themselves that people would dig it because it's confusing in a profound, postmodern kind of way. But you know what? They should have asked the readers after 2 or 3 issues and trusted the people putting down their money for this stuff. I will always love Morrison's incredible JLA run. Nothing's going to change that. But he is now on my poop list. And Dan Didio, or Didio, however you pronounce that, he's the head honcho at DC. He should have vetoed this crazy smear of nonsense. So he's on the list, too. Countdown, Batman RIP, and now Final Crisis. That's three strikes, Danny boy. Time to get a new job. I will still recommend the miniseries that are spinning out of Final Crisis, as they have very little connection to the main story and therefore are not easily tainted by it. Revelations has been very cool. Legion of Three Worlds as well, and Rogue's Revenge was awesome. I would highly recommend, if you're a DC fan, checking out those three story arcs. And yet, I hereby put DC on notice. Didio either gets a new job or openly apologizes and acknowledges his bad instincts for the last 2 years. Because, you know, I'd be willing to forgive him. Just acknowledge that, okay? Everybody makes kind of a bad mistake. Let's move forward. It's all about grace and forgiveness here. So let's just move forward and have a fresh start. But until he repents, and that happens... DC crossovers and big events at DC will be trade paperback purchases at best for me, and that's only if I read consistently good reviews of them. And now I close this time of ranting on Final Crisis with words designed to express the utter outrage and frustration I feel that those closest to me will understand the magnitude of. I wonder what Marvel is up to. All right, Legend of the Seeker. Now, two bits of dialogue jumped out at me last week while watching the most recent episode of Legend of the Seeker. Since the concept of the show and books lends itself to asking truth-oriented philosophical questions, I came up with a couple for last night's show. Kalen says, "You can't ask me to change my beliefs," to Richard. And Richard says, "And you can't ask me to change mine." Now, in the show, a baby's life hung in the balance during this conversation, and the argument hit a stalemate at this point as they both surrendered themselves to this overly sensitive mentality. Why can we not ask each other to change our beliefs? I agree that we can't demand that someone change their beliefs, but why can we not ask someone, in light of good evidence and solid reasoning, to change their belief on an issue? I mean, you know, if someone asks me that, I can always say no, right? What's the harm in asking if the request is accompanied by good reasoning? Well, in this episode, good reasoning didn't seem to be a weapon in anyone's arsenal. Richard wasn't acknowledging the potential problems with his opinion, and Kalen seemed to think that tradition was reason enough to hold on to hers. I suppose if we never talk about the reasons for our beliefs, it would be counterproductive to ask someone to change their mind, but is there any reason to avoid a discussion like that outside of the obvious difficulty of keeping cool and exercising emotional self-control? Maybe we've forgotten that emotional self-control is a virtue. I mean, we keep hearing that we should just follow our hearts anyway, right? Maybe that means we should follow our emotions. We seem to be living in a time when emotions trump all else. Now, make no mistake, I'm a very emotional guy, if you can't tell from the way I'm expressing this right now. I cry at the end of The Iron Giant and Frequency and Big Fish every time I see those movies. But emotions can't be the guiding elements when we're trying to determine what's true and what isn't. Emotions are our response to reality, not what teaches us reality, and we should be able to control our emotions and have a good dialogue with each other that's not emotionally charged, right? Can we agree on that? Okay, back to my emotionally charged rant. Zed, in trying to explain why a baby must die, said to Richard, "Evil is in its nature." It's meaning the baby, right? Richard responded saying, "Well, it's not in mine." Oh, really, Richard? There's no evil in your nature? No selfishness? No tendency to serve yourself before others, ever? Being less than good, which is the opposite of evil, all the time, never comes naturally to you? Well, wow, I guess you must be perfect then. Unless your definition of evil only includes murder, sadism, rape, stealing, hatred, you know, all the really bad stuff. Maybe you just have the have kinda evil in your nature. I can't believe they gave this guy the sword of truth. Now, I, otherwise known as Alan, sent me a comment on this. He says, "This may be a little off your specific point, but remember that in Goodkind's objectivist world, pursuing of one's own desires or pursuing one's own rational self-interest is not considered an evil thing." To which I responded, "Ooh, I think you're right. That does sound familiar. I remember taking it to more often refer to civil liberties in the books, pursuit of happiness and all that, but it sounds familiar that he would have included pursuing personal desires without qualifying his statement. And while we do have some personal desires that are very good, we've got plenty that are bad, too."
The Christian Song Smorgasbord brings you the latest and greatest in Christian music. Tunes from your favorite artists, along with selections from today's best independent artists. Join me, JD the Music Man, each and every week for an assortment of musical flavors. Simply go to www.thecssonline.net.
Classic Yak International and Spiritblade Productions are proud to present.
In January's episode, to celebrate the release of Spirit Blade Dark Ritual, Classic Yak will be giving away the original Spirit Blade audio drama.
For further details, visit classicyak.org.
Every word of grass proves true. The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word of our God stands forever.
We're looking at 1 Corinthians chapter 3 today as we try to cut through tradition and man-made ideas and examine the truth presented in the Bible. Now, in this chapter, Paul points to the Corinthians' jealousy and conflict as evidence that they are not maturing spiritually. They have become stagnant in their growth, still at the infant stage of their spiritual maturity. Paul uses reason to point out the problem with their disputes over who is the superior teacher. It is God who gave each of them the opportunity to believe, using Apollos and Paul as instruments. Look at verse 5. Paul introduced them to the truth. Apollos contributed teaching afterward, but it was God that actually brought them brought about growth in them. Excuse me. Look at verses 6 and 7. Everyone who works and gives themselves and their resources for God's purposes is united, no matter what their unique role may be. Paul may have laid the foundation, but he says his ability to do so is because of God's grace, which means undeserved favor, because of God's grace toward him. What Paul seems to be hammering home with all of this is the idea that we should not put each other up on platforms or pedestals, but recognize that it is God using all of us in the spotlight or in the shadows to do what he alone is empowering us to do. Paul continues saying that no one can lay a foundation that isn't based on and originating in Christ. Starting in verse 12, Paul begins alluding to the time when Christ will judge everyone based on their work. Now, this may sound wrong to someone from a heavily grace-oriented background. We're not saved by works, are we? No. We're saved by God's gift to us through Jesus' death and payment for our sins. Look more closely at the text here, though. Verses 12 through 15 describe how a person's deeds will be tested using the metaphor of fire, a symbol for judgment in the Bible. Those who have invested in the things that matter, things of substance, will see their work survive. It'll have eternal impact. That's what that represents. Work that invests in other people and in their understanding of and relationship to God. Although we don't know specifics, there will be rewards for this kind of investment in this life. Those who invest in only physical things or self-serving efforts will see that those objects and pleasures don't last. They won't receive any reward for them, but they will still be saved from hell. Paul pleads with the Corinthians to understand that the God of all the universe, the ultimate being, the perfect life, lives inside of them. The Greek here is plural, so Paul is saying that they collectively are the temple of God. He warns that anyone that tries to destroy that temple, the implications in context would refer to those destroying Christian unity through petty arguing, anyone that tries to destroy that temple will themselves be destroyed. Now, the Greek word for destroyed here can mean either corruption or death. So in other words, those who corrupt the relationships that make up a church community will be either allowed to become corrupt themselves and face the consequences, the natural consequences of that, or they may even be caused to die. Wow. Paul further pleads for their humility, setting the record straight about where the greatest wisdom can be found. He says that anyone who thinks they are wise by the popular culture standards should become a fool by those same standards if they hope to become truly wise. Truth and real wisdom come from God. He is the only completely reliable source. And though popular culture may think God's ideas are foolish, God knows that truth is not determined by democratic vote. This chapter ends with Paul putting things in perspective. We don't need to strive for significance or popularity. All the things that really matter have been given to us already, and we belong to God. We are his special possession. That gives us more significance than anything else possibly could. And man, that is a hard thing for me to remember. I'm constantly battling that idea. I want to create my own significance, even with good intentions and ministry and sharing truth in mind. I so often get, you know, the internal battle going on about my own significance, as opposed to recognizing that the ultimate, the highest significance I could have is being a new creation and being loved by God, being made in his image, as all people are, but then also being redeemed and given a hope and a promise to be with him forever. I mean, that so outweighs anything else in this life that I could hope would make my existence significant. The coffeehouse question is, why do you think we find it so hard to find our significance in God instead of our own achievements or possessions? I would love to hear your thoughts on that. Let's check out some of your comments, shall we? Jennifer, in response to my coffeehouse question from the other week, asking, you know, what do you think the average person, how do you think the average person would define the word spiritual? Jennifer says, I think a lot of people would say being spiritual would mean being something like more new agey, connected to psychic lifestyles and reincarnation related thinking. I don't think they'd even consider Christianity. At least that's how I think of it when I put all Christian beliefs aside. What's left is the majority of what's practiced by the world around us, the empowerment of the mind over body, which is true to an extent because spiritually, on a soul level, we are powerful beings, but beings dependent on the external force, God, who designed us. And I totally agree, Jennifer. It's amazing how God designed us, and, you know, there's amazing things that we can, that our bodies can do when we focus our minds, and some great things can come of that. We were designed incredibly, and we're always learning more about that, but we got to be careful not to interpret what our minds can do to something spiritual, when in fact it's just something physical. So we got to learn how to kind of discern that. So I totally agree with what you're saying and where you're coming from. Regarding responses to my Underworld review last week, Joel said, I've enjoyed your recent reviews as you seem to watch films I wouldn't normally choose to see, The Unborn, Babylon AD, and believe me, Joel, actually I'd prefer that I wouldn't have seen them either. Live and learn. He says, I really enjoyed the first Underworld, but was unimpressed with the second, mostly because it seemed to sacrifice story arc for action sequences. How does this one compare with the first two? I said, thanks, Joel. I may not be the best judge on that question since I really enjoyed Evolution. I'd say the number of action sequences in Lycans is comparable to Evolution. And in a 92-minute movie, that does leave less room for story, especially if you're used to the extended cut of Underworld with even more story elements and background. You may feel the same with Lycans as you did with Evolution, but I'd still recommend giving it a try since several elements, cast, director, are different, and it's not as easily compared to Underworld as Evolution is, so have fun with that. Mandy said, Peter, I sincerely love reading your reviews. Do you think you could do one on, say, The Parent Trap with Haley Mills? I would love to give you a list of movies to review and see what you have to say. I think it would be a hoot. Mandy, I don't think I'd enjoy reviewing movies like the classic Parent Trap. They typically aren't what's on my brain, which is what the blog is all about that I post my reviews on, and I take those reviews and put them on the podcast here. But I will say that it's interesting to note the change in what we consider a, quote, happy ending between Parent Trap and a movie later on, like Mrs. Doubtfire. In one, the divorced parents get back together, in the other, they all just learn to live with the divorce. The standard of the happy ending is in escapist fiction seems to be dropping in favor of realism. There are pros and cons to this. A higher standard gives us a better dream to strive for, while a lower standard is something we can relate to more and so is often more emotionally engaging. But in a culture where our ideas of what is, quote, normal are so often drawn from film and TV, at least in my opinion, I think that's what a lot of people do, should we have a few more happy endings to help us strive for something better than what we settle for? Maybe, but that could also result in a lot of heavy-handed moralizing, which tends to drag stories down and actually turn people off of the message presented. At the end of the day, I think we ought to learn to discern truth better and not allow entertainment to define our standards or philosophical worldview. So there's my thoughts on Parent Trap, but I'm afraid the next movie on your list, Mandy, is going to have to involve lots of action, the constant threat of death, some weird creatures, and or a magical sword. Now we've got, I think it's my first phone called in comment. Take a listen.
Hello, Peter. This is Mary Husenbaum. And your show is the bomb, and it is very special to me, and that is all of that.
Well, thanks, Mary. I'm glad you're digging the show. That's it for this week. Next week, I'm going to really try. I'm lining up an interview right now with a Christian sci-fi book publisher. So I am really hoping to that interview will work out and we won't have to reschedule, because if it works, I will have that interview for you next week here on the show. I think that'll be cool to get his perspective on Christian sci-fi and fantasy. So hopefully you can count on that next week. But if, as always, I never really know what's going to go on next week. So we'll just hope it's cool or weird enough to keep you entertained. And in the meantime, why not spend some time seeking the truth?
Visit www.spiritblade.net. Peter is a crazy freak. Green Lantern is awesome. Visit www.spiritblade.net.